This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Awakened Media presenting The Real Dirt on Farmer John, a film about the true story of maverick farmer John Peterson's hero's journey of life, love, death, and sweet potatoes. Opens Wednesday, February 1st at Cinema 21. Information at therealdirt.net.
Good morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Friday, January 27th, 2006. I'm Jim Thompson.
And I'm Chris Andre.
Coming up on KBOO Morning News, a new state task force will review land use laws in Oregon. Several prominent Democratic senators urge for a filibuster on Alito's nomination. And Israeli Defense Forces shoot a 7-year-old girl on the premise that she was carrying a bag. Today's Portland area weather. Today, showers likely in the morning, decreasing in the afternoon, highs around 45. Tonight, rain, breezy, lows 35 to 40.
The dean of Oregon State University's College of Forestry expressed regret that professors attempted to derail a graduate student from getting research published that raised doubts about the Bush administration's post-wildfire logging policy. The student, Daniel Donato, found that forests recover from wildfires best when they are not logged. This conflicts with the administration's decision to log trees that burned in southwest Oregon's Biscuit Fire and with a bill in Congress that would speed logging after wildfires. Donato's work was published this month in the journal Science, even though the Oregon State scientists asked the publication not to print the research. The dean of OSU, Hal Salwas, has said in a letter to the university that he should have told the professors to voice their criticism through open scientific debate. He added that he should have congratulated Donato. Salwas testified in favor of the bill that would accelerate logging after fires. The episode created concern that researchers at the respected forestry school face a backlash if they reach conclusions that clash with the timber industry and leading faculty.
The 10 members of a new state task force have a big job of taking the first broad look at Oregon's land use planning system since its creation more than 3 decades ago. Governor Ted Kulongowski announced its member yesterday's. He said its work goes beyond the effects of a property compensation law that voters approved in 2004 and the Oregon Supreme Court is considering in a legal challenge heard on January 10th. Members were chosen by Kulongowski and the legislature's presiding officers for more than 100 applicants. They include local officials, business owners, lawyers, and a farmer and a rancher. None is from Marion or Polk counties. Kulongowski and Senate President Peter Courtney said among the selection factors were geography and experience in land use and government. Kulongowski said the task force may offer an opportunity to return Oregon's land use program to basics. He compared it to the workers' compensation changes he led as state insurance commissioner in 1990 that boosted payments to injured workers and reduced premiums for businesses. Oregon, in 1973, became the first state to establish statewide requirements for city and county land use plans. The requirement put most rural lands off limits to development, protected them for farming and forestry, and confined most development within urban growth boundaries. About two-thirds of the more than 1,000 Measure 37 claims filed with the state originate in the Willamette Valley, but development pressures also exist in central and southern Oregon and in the Columbia Gorge. This from the Salem Statesman Journal.
By this time, the world knows about Newport, Oregon's rejection of the shipbreaking facility. What the world does not know is that a group of people who work in Newport, love Yucuna Bay, and depend on the help of the ocean for their livelihoods managed to mobilize a grassroots movement resisting the destruction of the waters that they love. I went down to Newport to talk to people in the days leading up to the Port Commission meeting on the 24th. At the meeting, people expected that at the worst, the Port Commission would announce that they would sign a letter of intent with Baybridge Enterprises, At best, they anticipated that the commission would hear input from the community and then table the foregone conclusion until some later date. Here's what happened.
We can only invest in infrastructure and bringing in new businesses at a level that are still a responsible return on the investment. In the case of Bainbridge Enterprise, even though this company checked out as being a good, sound business and has proven to be a safe and environmentally friendly company, our continued work for developing the feasibility of this project has led port staff to conclude that it does not seem to fit our test of good business. Good business management.
That was Don Mann at the Port Commission meeting in Newport.
A private research group says some of the Pentagon's psychological warfare aimed at people overseas may be hitting close to home. A lengthy document obtained by the National Security Archive spells out the military's information operations. Those messages aimed at influencing target audiences abroad are not supposed to be directed at Americans, including soldiers. The document acknowledges there is a spillover, but the research group says it shows the Pentagon doesn't care, on grounds that as long as Americans aren't the intended audience, quote, it does not matter. The Pentagon rejects that interpretation, saying what it does is appropriate. Recently disclosed good news stories planted in Iraqi newspapers are defended as getting the truth out.
A federal health official has warned a gathering of mayors that they cannot expect the federal government to save the cities in the event of a bird flu pandemic. That warning was given at a Washington meeting of the U.S. Conference of Mayors by Alex Azar, Deputy Secretary for the Department of Health and Human Services. Azar says any community that fails to prepare for a possible pandemic will be tragically wrong. But Lima, Ohio,
finds the gap between rich and poor in America is widening. Factors cited include a decline in union membership, global competition, and a federal minimum wage that has remained relatively flat. The report was prepared by the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities and the Economic Policy Institute. The study found that the incomes of the poorest 20% of families nationally grew by an average of about $2,600, or 19%, over the past 20 years. On the upper end, the incomes of the richest fifth of families grew by about $45,000, or nearly 59%. Families in the middle saw their income rise 28%, or $10,000.
Federal Reserve Chairman Alan Greenspan is urging Congress to close a regulatory loophole that lets companies own a certain category of banks, which includes a bank Walmart stores wants to operate in Utah. The Fed chief's remarks take direct aim at an exemption in federal law that allows any type of company, commercial firm, foreign bank, or other, to own so-called industrial loan companies in a handful of states, principally Utah, California, and Nevada. When the exemption was adopted in 1987, industrial loan companies were mostly small, locally owned institutions that had only limited deposit-taking and lending powers. Since then, however, these loan companies have grown considerably. Walmart has filed an application to operate an industrial loan company in Utah. The exemption Walmart is after allows the corporate owners of these industrial loan companies to avoid the regulatory requirements that apply to corporate owners of other types of insured banks overseen by the Federal Reserve. Greenspan found this troubling. Some legislative proposals in Congress would change the exemption to give industrial loan companies more leeway in their business activities.
The Oregon Department of Agriculture has issued a civil penalty of nearly $152,000 to Cascade Division of Western Farm Service. It's headquartered in Tangent. They were issued 191 pesticide-related violations that occurred from 2002 to early 2005. The violations include sales of restricted-use pesticides to unlicensed applicators, falsification of records, and selling restricted-use pesticides without a pesticide dealer license. Officials say the civil penalty is the largest issued by the ODA for violations of Oregon's pesticide law. Some of the investigations were initiated due to the death of migratory geese in 2005 from exposure to zinc phosphide. Violations occurred at five separate Western Farm Service stores in the Willamette Valley, including stores in Ballston, Carlton, Hopmere, Hubbard, and Rickreall.
In Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, Bill Scruton's campaign manager, James Saith, said he knew he was in trouble as soon as the words came stumbling off his tongue. In a live call-in show on cable TV, Saith told viewers that Scruton's opponent for the Republican gubernatorial nomination, Lynn Swan, who's African-American, was the rich white guy in the campaign. By the end of the show, callers were demanding an apology from Saith, and within an hour, Scruton had fired him. His dismissal came at a time when Scruton has been trying to slow Swan's increasing momentum towards capturing the party's formal endorsement on February 12th. Saith said he was trying to point out that Swan, who portrays himself as a political outsider, was really part of the establishment. Although Swan is seeking to make history as the first elected black governor in Pennsylvania, neither he nor other candidates had brought race into the campaign.
A few highlights from President Bush's press conference yesterday, as reported by The Guardian. Bush distanced himself from Jack Abramoff in his first comments since the lobbyist pleaded guilty to conspiracy, mail fraud, and tax evasion charges in an influence peddling scandal. Bush said, although he has had his picture taken with Abramoff a number of times, he does not know him and has never sat down and had a discussion with him. Also, Bush expressed reluctance to change the law to give him explicit authority to eavesdrop on conversations between people in America and people overseas with suspected terrorist ties. Some law experts and lawmakers from both parties have questioned whether it is legal to spy on the communications without court approval and without fully briefing Congress. Bush said he hasn't seen a report that Human Rights Watch put out last week alleging that his administration has a deliberate strategy of abusing terror suspects during interrogations. But he said any allegation that the United States tortures people is wrong. Bush said he does not want his aides to testify before Congress about the government's response to Hurricane Katrina, including his former FEMA director, Michael Brown. He said the White House has its own investigation to determine what went wrong, and he said the White House is cooperating.
According to the Washington Post, several prominent Democratic senators called for a filibuster of Samuel Alito's Supreme Court nomination. The move exposes a deep divide in the Democratic Party. The filibuster's supporters, including Senators John Kerry and Edward Kennedy, acknowledge that the bid is likely to fail and that Alito is virtually certain to be confirmed. But, they said, extended debate may draw more Americans' attention to Alito's conservative stands on abortion, civil rights, presidential powers, and other matters. Kennedy said that Alito does not share the values of equality and justice that make this country strong. He adds that Alito does not deserve a place on the highest court of the land. Liberal groups such as People for the American Way have implored Democratic senators to filibuster Alito's nomination, even if it means nothing more than staking out their principles and showing that Democrats will fight against a party that controls the House, Senate, and White House. But many Republicans have relished the idea of a Democratic-led filibuster, saying it helps them portray the minority party as obstructionist and beholden to left-leaning groups.
Whitewater Independent Counsel Kenneth Starr is stepping in to try to spare a Californian condemned inmate from being executed next month. The American Civil Liberties Union says Starr is helping draft inmate Michael Morales' petition for clemency that Governor Schwarzenegger said must be submitted today. Starr, a former federal appeals judge and solicitor general, will urge Schwarzenegger, who has never granted clemency, to commute Morales' life term without parole. The 46-year-old Morales was convicted and sentenced to death for raping and murdering a 17-year-old Lodi girl found in a vineyard 25 years ago. Starr is currently the dean at Pepperdine University Law School.
ExxonMobil's appeal of a $5 billion judgment against the company for the 1989 Valdez oil spill is back in the San Francisco court this morning. The case is one of the nation's longest-running legal disputes. It stems from a 1994 decision by an Alaska jury to award punitive damages to 34,000 fishermen and Alaskans. Their property and livelihoods were harmed when the Valdez struck a reef and spilled 11 million gallons of crude oil across the Alaskan coastline. It's the third time the case has come before the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals.
The Minuteman Project is expected to file a lawsuit against the city of Laguna Beach in Santa Ana today, alleging discrimination and violation of free speech. Group co-founder Jim Gilchrist says the city is violating the self-styled Border Patrol's rights by keeping it out of its Patriots Day parade in March. The nonprofit group that runs the parade had rejected a float sponsored by the group. Parade planners say participation by the Minuteman Project would violate a ban on groups with a religious or political affiliation or message. But Gilchrist maintains that the Minuteman Project isn't political and that many of the parade's past and current entrants violate the same rule.
Canadian Prime Minister-elect Stephen Harper has defended plans to send military icebreakers to the Arctic in defiance of criticism from Washington. U.S. Ambassador David Wilkins said that Washington opposed the plan and, like most other countries, did not recognize Canada's claims. Harper said his mandate was from the Canadian people, not Wilkins. Harper's conservatives have promised to defend Canada's northern waters from claims by the U.S., Russia, and Denmark. The conservative plans include the construction and deployment of three new armed heavy ice-breaking ships and an underground network of listening posts. The BBC says Canada has only recently woken up to the fact that with global warming being blamed for melting ice in the Arctic, the so far mythical Northwest Passage, which could link the Atlantic and the Pacific, may in fact become a reality. But the U.S. has challenged Canada's claim, saying that it considers much of the region to be international waters. Ambassador Wilkins described the Canadian position as creating a problem that did not exist.
Israel ruled out talks with the vanquished Fatah, rejected a joint government with Hamas after the Islamic movement's sweeping victory in Palestinian elections in what could be just the first steps in isolating the incoming rulers and freezing Mideast peace initiatives. The United States and European nations declared Thursday that Hamas could not form a legitimate government unless it drops its demand to destroy Israel and renounce violence. Israel went a predictable step further. Acting Prime Minister Ehud Olmert issued a statement saying the State of Israel will not negotiate with the Palestinian administration if even part of it is an armed terrorist organization calling for the destruction of the State of Israel. President Bush said, "If your platform is the destruction of Israel, it means you're not a partner in peace, and we're interested in peace." Bush also commented to current President Mahmoud Abbas that he should stay in office and move the process forward.
According to the Muslim American website, a U.S. civil liberties group has sued the government for using the Patriot Act as an instrument of censorship, citing the denial of a visa to a renowned Muslim scholar. The lawsuit argues that the Department of Homeland Security's policy of ideological exclusion prevents U.S. citizens hearing ideas whose expression is protected by the Constitution. The clause in the Patriot Act targeted by the ACLU lawsuit allows the government to deny a visa to anyone it believes has endorsed or espoused terrorist activity or persuaded others to do so. Named as a plaintiff in the suit was Tariq Ramadan, a Swiss intellectual and prominent Muslim scholar. Ramadan had been denied a visa since August of 2004, preventing him from assuming a tenured teaching position at the University of Notre Dame and from accepting speaking invitations inside the United States. The ACLU, along with the American Academy of Religion, the American Association of University Professors, and Penn American Center, insisted that Ramadan, who opposes the war in Iraq, had never expressed support for terrorism. Ramadan says he opposed the U.S. invasion of Iraq and sympathizes with the resistance there and in Palestine, but said he also opposes extremism and promotes peaceful solutions.
Two German engineers abducted this week in northern Iraq appealed to the German government to work for their release in a videotape broadcast earlier today by an Arab TV station. It was the first sign of the pair since they were seized 3 days ago. The tape showed the two engineers, identified by relatives as Thomas Nitschke and René Braunlich, seated on the floor with at least four armed men standing behind them. The timestamp on the tape showed that it was less than 2 hours after they were abducted in the northern industrial city of Beji, 155 miles north of Baghdad.
Mexico's top diplomat suggested yesterday that American soldiers disguised as Mexican troops may have been in the military-style Humvee filmed earlier this week protecting a marijuana shipment on the border. Foreign Secretary Luis Ernesto Deves also told a news conference that U.S. soldiers had helped drug smugglers before. However, he offered no evidence. His comments came a day after U.S. Ambassador Tony Garza issued a statement asking the Mexican government to fully investigate the border incident. Monday's armed standoff began 50 miles east of El Paso, Texas, when Texas State Police tried to stop three sport utility vehicles on Interstate 10. The vehicles made a quick U-turn and headed south toward the border a few miles away. Crossing the border, one SUV got stuck in the Rio Grande River, and men in a Humvee tried in vain to tow it out. Then a group of men in civilian clothes began unloading what appeared to be bundles of marijuana and torched the SUV before fleeing. Mexico insisted that the men in military-style uniforms were drug smugglers, not soldiers. In Mexico, kidnappers and drug smugglers regularly wear police gear, which is sold at street stands.
Medical marijuana crusader Steve Cubby is in a San Mateo County jail tonight after spending years as a fugitive in Canada. Police say Cubby was arrested after arriving at San Francisco Airport. There was an emotional farewell earlier in Vancouver as Cubby reluctantly returned to the United States to face a jail sentence. Cubby ran for governor of California in 1998 under the Libertarian Party banner. He attempted to claim Canadian refugee status on the basis of persecution, both for his political opinion and his medicinal use of pot.
And this has been the KBOO Morning News for Friday, January 27, 2006. Portland area weather. Today, showers likely in the morning, decreasing in the afternoon. Highs around 45. Tonight, rain, breezy, lows 35 to 40. Saturday, rain, breezy, highs around 50. Saturday night, showers likely, lows around 40. Sunday, rain, likely, highs around 50. And Sunday night, rain, likely, lows 40 to 45. Thanks for joining us for this morning's news. The morning newscast was edited by Becca Bartelson and Chris Andre. Our engineer is Becca Bartelson. The KBOO AM News and Public Affairs Director is Kathleen Stevenson. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Jim Thompson.
Stay tuned. We have coming up right now at 7:30 on Ian Melody, host Positively Revolting Talk Radio. At 9, it's the Friday Radio Zine. Guests include local writer Doug Lane, author of Last Week's Apocalypse. He's launching the release of his new book with sponsorship from Education Without Borders, and proceeds from the book sales will go to Books Not Bombs Project for Katrina Victims. We'll also hear from documentary filmmaker Pat Penny Lane, who is showing her film Abortion Stories this weekend in Portland. We'll have a movie review from Jay Thiemeyer at 10:30. It's the KABU Report, and at 11, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. Stay tuned for the KABU Evening News at 5 p.m. If you'd like to help with the morning news, KABU needs volunteers to help get important stories like these out to listeners. Please contact us at amnews@kabu.org or call 503-231-8032, extension 202. This is KABU, your community radio station, in Portland at 90.7 FM, in Corvallis at 100.7 on translator K264AA, in Hood River at 91.9 FM at translator K220HR. Have a great weekend.
This is the KABU Community Calendar for Friday, January 27. Tonight, PSU presents a new film called The Future of Food. The Future of Food examines the complex web of market and political forces that are changing what we eat as huge multinational corporations seek to control the world's food system. This film will be playing at 7 and 9 p.m., located at PSU Neuenberger Hall, Room 8, on 724 Southwest Harrison Street. For more info, call Northwest Rage at 503-239-4861. Make Hillary listen. Bring the troops home now in a protest taking place tonight at 7:30 p.m. at the Portland Hilton Executive Tower. Code Pink Portland, along with Veterans for Peace Chapter 72, Portland Peaceful Response Coalition, AUPHR, the No War Drum Corps, and others will be gathering. For more info, visit CodePinkPortland.org. City Repair invites you and your community to propose a project for the 2006 Village Building Convergence. Projects can be place-oriented, ecological, artistic, structural, social, even live. The main goal is to promote cooperative, community-based efforts to reconnect with each other and enhance the places we live. Details on previous projects, the proposal process, and requests for proposals online at www.cityrepairs.org or at the City Repairs Headquarters, 2122 Southeast Division. Or you can call 503-235-8946. There will be a showing of End of Suburbia, Oil Depletion, and the Collapse of the American Dream on Friday at 7 p.m. The film explores the American way of life and its prospects as the planet approaches a critical era as a global demand for fossil fuels began to outstrip supply. This film is written and directed by Gregory Green. It will be showing at the First Unitarian Church at 1011 Southwest 12th. There is a $5 suggested donation, but no one will be turned away. For more info, call Barbara Ford at 503-282-0740. That was Community Calendar for Friday, January 27th. I'm Latoya Hudson. You're listening to KBOO.